Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 77, Intentional Leadership with Jamie Damsker. Awakening to Authentic Leadership, Jamie Damsker's journey from fighter aviator to transformative coach. What this episode will do for you is discover Jamie's coaching journey, his transition from U.S. Air Force officer and technology consultant to a renowned leadership coach. Learn the importance of being present by understanding the impact of being intentional and present in enhancing relationships and performance. Discover the distinction between being and knowing and how this awareness can transform your approach to leadership. Learn about questioning your own truth, gaining insights into the power of questioning your own beliefs and being open to others' perceptions for personal growth. And altering your relationship with thoughts. Learn how altering your relationship with your thoughts can lead to greater alignment with your goals and improve overall well-being. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode of Thought Leadership Studio, I'm thrilled to introduce Jamie Damsker. He's a renowned public speaker and leadership coach known for his transformative approach to personal and professional development. With a background as a U.S. Air Force officer and fighter aviator, and significant experience in technology deployment and strategic consulting, Jamie's built multi-million dollar businesses and facilitated international acquisitions. Jamie shares his journey to coaching, emphasizing the importance of being awake to one's thoughts and way of being. He explores the distinction between being and knowing, and how intentional presence can enhance relationships and performance. Jamie discusses the power of questioning one's truth and altering the relationship with thoughts to align with personal and professional goals. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Jamie Damsker, a renowned public speaker and leadership coach. Jamie is recognized for his ability to help individuals access their extraordinary selves and achieve profound performance in their lives. He began his career as a U.S. Air Force officer and fighter aviator, earning the Distinguished Flying Cross for his service. Transitioning to the private sector, JB made significant impacts in technology deployment and strategic consulting, building multi-million dollar businesses and facilitating international acquisitions. Now he brings his experiences and unique perspectives to his true passions, public speaking and coaching. Whether delivering a keynote talk to corporate leaders or working one-on-one with a client, Jamie has a gift for guiding people to discover and nurture the powerful leader within them. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you, Chris. Good morning. Thank you for that kind introduction.
My pleasure. Yeah, I find your background fascinating. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about the intrinsic rewards of coaching and the peak performance self through fitness mastery and things like that. And I get one question I like to lead with to help listeners have some context for where a guest is coming from is your current path of coaching and public speaking, of positively influencing people to find their best selves. Was there a pivotal moment or an event or something or a shift in thinking that led you in this particular direction?
Yeah, there was absolutely an event. It was in about, it's just about 10 years ago. And I don't know if the details of the event matter, but what I would say is at the time when I woke up that morning in October of 2014, I think, whatever day it was, I was running a consulting practice. A practice that did consulting for government agencies. And I had staff across the country. I had two young sons at home, both in a really good private school. My beautiful wife, who I stole away from Norway, successful dentist in a pediatric practice. So by all measures, from the outside looking in, like my life was really good. And it was really good. It still is, by the way. It's better than good now. And I went to an event at my alma mater, the Citadel. And the idea was to show up as a local business leader who just happened to be a graduate as well, but that's not necessary, and spend an entire day with the seniors who are going to go in the civilian direction, not all go in the military. Mm-hmm. And I sat at a table in the round with a bunch of seniors, and by mistake, they put another business person at the same table with me. It's supposed to be just one business leader and a bunch of cadets from the Citadel. And for those of your listeners who aren't familiar, the Citadel is a military college here in Charleston. And that other person introduced himself as a coach. Now, in that moment, to be honest, and I'm trying to recollect this accurately, Chris, I didn't know what a coach was beyond those in the domain of sports. I knew what a mentor was. I knew what a boss is, a leader. Well, my definition of leader back then. And I didn't know what a coach was. And he spent the rest of the day, the two of us, with these cadets. And the things that came out of his mouth, like they really threw me off. They weren't what I commonly heard people say. He talked a little bit about his job. He said what he charged people. I thought that was insane. Who would pay that kind of money for that kind of thing? And by the end of the day, there was just something inside of me that was just off, or I'll say ill at ease. And that night, this person happened to send out a blast email to all of the other leaders with an ebook attached. And he thanked everyone for showing up. And I read the ebook. And after I read the ebook, I was even more off balance. Like it shook me to my core. It woke me up like, what am I missing? And so I reached out to him. We had some conversations, and I'd say this was in October of that year. I told you that when he talked about how much he charged, what he did, I thought it was insane. I didn't understand it. 2 months later, I hired him. Mm-hmm. And I hired him with the express intention of becoming a world-class coach like he is. It just made sense to me. Now, that's not why most people hire coaches. And I could have hired him to create myself as a better husband, a better father, a better leader in the business I was in, but there was a pulling of me towards that work. And so, yeah, it's a very specific moment. I didn't walk around dreaming about being a coach. There are some people who just sort of learn about it. It's more prevalent on social media now, but back then no one talked about coaching. And I really haven't looked back.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you started out by hiring a coach.
Yes.
And yeah, it opens up a whole new world. And people, I guess, have a mental model of a coach, of a high school football coach, kind of, all right, let's get you ready for the game. But how deep can it go? How far and how wide and how broad and how high is the realm of coaching to you and how you utilize it?
Yeah, my one word answer, and I'll expound on it, is yes. But and the word coaching, like the word consulting, is a bit overused. I grant people the space, so it means different things to different people, but I don't have a better word, so I call myself a coach. I'll give you an example. Someone may hire me because they want to grow their business. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty reasonable. Like, I want to get a coach to make me a better leader so I can lead my people and we can perform better. And we may come together in those terms. And what we might discover together is a way for them to show up as a husband or a wife or parent in the most profound way that completely alters their relationship with their spouse or their children, and will still handle the business thing. Now, I've been with people around some of the rawest things going on in their lives. Things, everything from infidelity to dire sickness to children who are questioning their gender to COVID to financial ruin. And I can't get there to that depth of a conversation with someone to have them be willing and desire to expose themselves to me if at the front end, we don't create a relationship that what I would call is rare. Like, I grant people the intimacy they have in their relationship with their spouse, as an example, and the relationships that I'm committed to creating, the relationships that I've experienced with my own coaches, is beyond intimate. And I don't know how to get to the results that someone really wants deep down inside if they're not willing to go there. And I hold myself accountable for getting us there. Like, I meet people where they're at. Like, they've got to bring themselves to the relationship. I'm really clear about it. And if I'm awake and I'm being effective, I will create where they are the space for them to see that they can step into, so to speak, to bring that level of intimacy.
That's profound. And is creating this environment of deep rapport, maybe for lack of a better word, essential to helping people discover deeper potential within themselves? Am I understanding that rapport equals self-discovery, guided self-discovery?
Yeah, you know, there's a, I call this a journey of subtraction. You know, I think it's Michelangelo, when they asked him about creating David, and I'll butcher the quote, and I don't even know if it can be accurately attributed to him, but I'm going to say it anyway because I find it to be so profoundly appropriate to this conversation. Like, David was always in there. He just had to chip away the stone to get to him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yes. To me, this is the same. I have an advantage. I know beyond a doubt what you have behind all of the thoughts and the feelings and the emotions that are in your way. And so my role, some of it is, probably most of it, or the heavy lift would be to be with another human being, to have them break through that muck and mire that we've been piling on since we were kids.
Right.
Our parents didn't help. Sorry to say it, parents. I'm a parent too. And when we can get behind all it or above it, however you want to, whatever perspective you want to use, from that place, We can create anything. To answer your question specifically, I don't know how I can have another human being step into that possibility if we're have a relationship at a superficial level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I also recognize, Chris, that it's up to me. I hold myself responsible for teaching people how to show up to me, because it's not common. There's nothing that we've talked about thus far, either before we started taping or now, or I have a sense for the rest of our time together, that's common. And most people have lived common. It's just the natural pull of society and our conditioning that we do common. Now, there's a big, broad spectrum of common, but I'm looking to be with people in a very uncommon way so they can uncommonly create the life that they actually want, not the one that's dictated to them or that society tells them they should have.
That's awesome. And that seems to be a theme in your work. From listening to some prior interviews you did and looking at your work, it seems to the deconditioning aspect to find what might be termed the authentic self behind the conditioning. And you mentioned things like helping people take control of their thinking process and realize that we got this dialogue, inner dialogue, where we generate our quote world. And that's why I say when we talk about strategic thought leadership around here a lot, say strategic thought leadership can change the world for the person you're working with, or for even the consumer of your content. Because if you change their thinking in a positive way, you've changed the world for them. So you're really changing the world for people.
Well, I'm loath to give myself the credit. I would, to more accurately for me, they're changing the world for themselves. Like I can be a Sherpa, so to speak, mm-hmm. but I can't climb the mountain for you.
Totally understood.
And as it relates to thinking, my relationship with thinking and thought, may I share this?
Yeah.
Is we're not our thoughts, yet we walk through the world like we are. And I'll give you an example. Think about language. I am angry. I am frustrated. I am happy. I am scared. And I can promise you a profound shift can happen in your life if you can alter that relationship. And it can sound nuanced, but to me, it's as dramatically different as night and day.
Mm-hmm.
I have the thought of being angry. Like if I can see, like we have between 30 and 60,000 thoughts per day. And no one, this is the uncommon thing I promised you, and no one has ever told us or asked us or challenged us to question our thoughts. So imagine you're looking to create a difference in the world and you are hamstrung by those thoughts. And the vast majority, I'd say over 95% of those thoughts we have, Chris, are inconsistent with the thoughts we'd want to have to create the outcomes we say we want to create. And then we look at the outcome versus the desired outcome, and there's a gap between them. And then what we do is we look outside of ourselves to put fault in that gap. Well, it's because of this. It's because of that. Thought, thought, thought. So I take a stand for, we're all creators. Like, we're amazing creators. And you have a choice what you create. Nothing on this planet that's man-made has ever been created without a preceding use of language. Written language, spoken language, and of course, thought language. Language creates, but only always. And if we have a relationship with our thoughts, like most of us do, that they're just us, and we just swing wildly like a sine wave or a cosine wave with our thoughts. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm scared, I'm not, I'm this, I'm that. He's that, she's that. I'm judging, I'm judging, I'm judging. We're creating, creating, creating. And then we wonder why why is it that what I'm creating isn't what works for me? Why do I have this underlying anxiety or frustration with my life? And human nature is we look outside of ourselves for a cause, and that simply perpetuates it. You know, part of my work, or what I see to be where breakthroughs really occur, is when a human being can, one, realize they're not their thoughts. Oh, they're powerful. Like, they'll work overtime to convince you, no, they're true. I mean, if you think about, and mostly in my public speaking, I speak a lot through the lens of neuroscience, a little bit about how the brain works, but from an operational perspective, how we use it. Those thoughts that aren't useful come on so much more quickly than the thoughts that are useful, it's overwhelming. And the only way to outcreate those is to alter your relationship with them. So if I can be with a human being, Chris, to have them alter their relationship with their thoughts, they'll discover that what they start to create is more and more consistent with what they tell themselves they want to create. And it shows up in every domain of your life: work, family, health, as you and I talked about. There are days, Chris, when I wake up in the morning, believe it or not, I don't want to go to the gym. I didn't want to go this morning. I have a busy day today. If the thought, I'm too tired, if I took it on like, it's true, it's me, I'm tired, I promise you right now, I would have told you I didn't go to the gym this morning. Or more likely, I wouldn't even bring up the subject. You know, I don't want to tell anyone I didn't go to the gym. No. I see the thought as not useful. I remind myself what I'm committed to. In this case, I'm at the domain of health. And I move my body and I go to the gym and I do what's required. And that happens over and over. It happens in domains of business. It happens in domains of, think about, are you married, Chris?
I am.
Yeah. Think about the domain of your marriage. This is one of my favorite topics because, one, it's so tender. And two, we're so asleep. We take it for granted. And I'll give you exhibit A, if I may. During COVID, when everyone was stuck at home, the divorce rate skyrocketed. I was not surprised. We had no place to hide from our relationships anymore. Yeah, we're so asleep. We're so messy. The distinction I create or I share with people is, think about if you're a leader at work and you have a challenge. Man, you'll stay up at night thinking about it. You'll go into work early. You'll call in your best and brightest. You'll grab the whiteboard and the 7 different colored pens, and we're not leaving until we solve it. Like, we really bring ourselves to it. At home, have a crossword with your spouse. What do? We walk out. We go to our neutral corner. We sulk. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
At work, we'll lose sleep over it. But for the person we've committed to being a partner for the rest of our lives, they'll just, we're asleep. We're absolutely asleep. And that's an example of where, well, I just believe the thoughts. And if I could wake someone up, which I'm committed to, I've seen them grow their business, and it's not a surprise to me, or it's not just a happy coincidence that what they create at home is just or more as profound.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Our lives are a reflection of our thoughts, are they not? And people in business who might be listening to this thinking, how can I improve my business or improve my online influence to improve my business? It's going to be your performance is a reflection of your mind. And I'm getting a couple really deep threads here. One of them is the disidentification with your thinking process. Because, we all are conditioned by society and we pick up all these, you are this, you are that, this works this way, this works that way, all these belief systems about ourselves and about life. And it's just random collecting beliefs from a neurotic society. And society is not sane. We can become sane within it, outside of it. But it affects us structurally. If we identify with these thoughts and identify with them to the level that this is who I am and this is how it is the world. But you're bringing up a process of separating from that and seeing that, what would be kind of the first steps for someone listening to this thinking, how do I start to become more aware of what my thoughts are and then take control of them and get them in alignment with what's really most important to me?
Yeah, I'll share another distinction with you. And if you've heard me use the word distinction, to me, it's a useful place to come from, a distinction of this or that. So a toehold I would offer is, well, let me preface it by saying this. My work is all about leadership and performance. Like, you show me performance in any domain of your life. Like, and work is a pretty easy one to look at. So let's stay there. Show me performance in a company, high performance, and I will show you effective leadership. Show me a lack of performance, and I promise you, give me some time with the people who run the organization, and we'll find an opportunity to upgrade leadership to create performance. But only always. And from my perspective and the work I do, leadership is all about who I'm being, or to use a fancy word, ontological. Like, I take a stand for that, it's who I'm being. The distinction now that I can share is the distinction of being and knowing or knowledge, or ontological and epistemological.
Mm-hmm.
We spend our lives in epistemology. We want to read books. We want to get more education. Oh, I want to be better at that. I need to get more knowledge. I have nothing about knowledge. I want a person who's going to do surgery on me to be the most knowledgeable doctor in the world. I want them to have finished first in their class. And when we're in the OR and they've got me cut open and something doesn't go as planned, there's one thing that trumps what they know. It's who they're being in the moment. And I'll give you an example, Chris. May I do that? And then I'm going to answer your question about what's a first thing. And it's a tragic example, but it's one that just stands out for me. You remember several years ago, the school shooting down in Parkland, Florida? I think it's called Parkland.
I do, yeah, fortunately.
Yeah. There's a picture, I think it's from a helicopter view, of one of the responding police officers, I think he was a sergeant, who basically froze behind the door of his car in the parking lot. And he was vilified. Now, I'm not saying that to bring up anyone's animosity or anger or frustration with that officer, but I want to point at something because he's a demonstration of, he was a sergeant, if I recall. So he'd been on the force for a while. So epistemologically, he's probably an expert. He knows what to do in all different things besides, you know, a shooting in a school. And when the moment came for him to be in action, his way of being, and I'm not going to fill in what it was because I wasn't there. I've never spoken to this man. But whatever his way of being was, it was being, not going through that door. Yeah, that's an unfortunate, yet to me, a pretty accurate illustration of the distinction between knowledge and being. So I'm sitting here saying who I'm being is everything. Processes, systems, love them. Go read Atomic Habits, great book. I encourage it. And you want to take whatever systems you put in place and put them on steroids, focus on who you're being, be awake to who you're being. So now I'm wanting to go on a journey of who I'm being, and I've got these thoughts in my head who are telling me who I am. I'm not good enough. I'm this, I'm that. If I believe them, my way of being will be not good enough. If my way of being is not good enough, how do you think I show up in the world?
Yeah, not optimally, definitely.
I'm not good enough. I am being not good enough. Who you're being has an impact outside of you. And anyone who's listening to this, think about a time Think about anyone in your life who, when they walk in the room, you sit up straighter, or there's something about that person that has you want to perform better. It's their way of being. Their way of being, whatever it happens to be, is having an impact on you. And by the way, you and I, Chris, and everyone listening, it happens the other way too. We're all asleep to it. For the most part, you're having an impact, or you do have a way of being. You can't not have a way of being. And it's not only participating in how you're showing up, it's having an impact on the others. What if I could be awake to my way of being and recognize, here's that nugget now. I want to create performance in an employee. Who do I have to be with them to create that? It could be attentive. It could be loving. It could be mentoring. It could be fill in the blank. Probably not frustrated, probably not angry. Mm-hmm. What if I could, and I've got thoughts that'll probably come up and chirp and say, that guy's been a problem child. Yeah. And if I'm asleep and I believe that, I'm going to show up to that person consistent with he's a problem child.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And what I'll do is I'll perpetuate he's a problem child. What if I could show up different? This is chipping away at myself. This is getting to my own David under the marble, the block of marble. This is chipping away. I'm showing up in a different way, in a way that has an impact on that person. And I see it happen every day. I call it miracles. To me, it is miracles. Before you know it, because of who you're being, you create that other person to show up to you differently. They respond to you differently. Just like the example I gave a while ago about, think about someone who walks in a room and you sit up straighter, or you wanna perform, mm-hmm. you wanna give them your word and you wanna follow through on what you said. Every one of us has the capacity to create it. And the only thing that gets in the way, the only thing, Chris, is us, those thoughts. It's the cruelest thing I know. This thing between our ears, our brain, is necessary to generate the language because language creates. It's also the greatest enemy we have because it generates language and language creates. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a struggle. And the part that works against us is much more powerful and much faster than the conscious part of our brain that we would say works in our favor. So it could sound like a doom and gloom story, but it's not. You can outcreate it by, as I've said, being awake to it. And like the thoughts will come up. Here's an example I bet anyone who drives a car can relate to. You ever been cut off? What's your response, Chris, when you get cut off in traffic?
Well, if I'm practicing good presence, then my response is to give them space and to see what I've done that unconsciously sometimes myself. But more likely, it's you son of a bitch.
Exactly. That occurs to me as accurate. Well, what if I just saw that coming up? Like, well, is it true? I have a thought that this guy or this woman, man, they're so rude. And like, think about, we'll create stories about them. Oh man, like this brain of ours, it's unleashed and it is going to build a narrative that supports the thought, what a jerk. Like you'll look for faults with their car or you'll look at their posture. Maybe if you pass them, you'll look at them and you'll critique how they look, their physical being, like, oh, they're vaping, or oh, not even a child seat, or too much makeup. Like you just, we are creating machines, and look what you did. Look at the cost of what just happened, not to them, but to you. Let's say you're a mile from home. Now you walk in the door at home. There's a really good chance you'll walk in differently because of that anger, that frustration that came up. Oh, babe, driving today. And now you're sharing with your spouse as distinct from walking in the house. Hey, sweetheart, I love you. So good to see you. And I don't have those complaints to share. What a difference you're making in the people outside of you. And it all comes back to going inside. You know, leadership to me starts with me going inside. And I remember I told you that gap, we fill in that gap with things outside of us. That's the mm-hmm. cause. if we can take radical self-responsibility for everything in our lives, Chris, I mean, everything.
Ooh, I love that phrase.
Man, you can literally transform your life. A few years ago, I had a woman sideswipe me in downtown Charleston. And we pulled over and she got out of the car and she was in tears. Now, if I was asleep, I would have been like, don't cry me those crocodile tears, right? Like, look at my car. Look, no, man. And she didn't have to be crying. First thing I asked her if she's okay. And we just stood on the side of the road, waited for the police, and we just had a great conversation about her and what's going on in her life. It was beautiful. Yeah. I didn't pay the price of anger. Like, if you think about it, would it have fixed my car? Would it undo what happened? Like, to just alter your relationship with what is. Like, it is.
Well,
it happened.
If I can... Yeah. Jump in just for a minute, because I want to give me so much gold here that I want to regurgitate it for finding out if I'm understanding it all correctly, but also for the listener to give another perspective to hopefully broaden the conversation out and contextualize it. A couple of themes are showing up fully in the moment, being deeply present, being aligned with yourself and what you're trying to accomplish so that unconscious negative belief systems don't get in the way because you've maybe done the work on self-meta programming, to give it another word, where your beliefs and your identity, as we're talking in the language I'm familiar with, the levels of influence, where the knowledge level is a lower level of influence than your belief systems and your identity. So being that person in to go back to that situation in Florida, to be fully present with the identity of someone who's there to help and serve selflessly would be a higher level of influence over oneself than having the knowledge. So to my alignment, and aligned people, as you brought out, have magnetism to them. They're congruent. And I think about an example of congruence, John F. Kennedy's speech, easy to find on the internet, of sending man to the moon and returning him safely to the earth. Just a deep congruence set off a mission that actualized many years later. But that congruence magnetizes people in service of a mission. Am I following these threads correctly, or what would you add or embellish that with?
No, I love everything that you said. And, you know, John F. Kennedy is a great example. There's someone who made a declaration, you know, to now use my language back. His language and his way of being created that. Now, I know there's things that happen in the background. He didn't just come up with it when he stood at the podium. Sure. But at some point, he was around a table, maybe with whoever was running NASA. It was even called NASA back then. I don't even recall if it was in 63 or 62. But he sat around a table and someone, if not him, someone spoke man on the moon into existence. It's amazing. Like, to go back to that moment, that's where the magic happened. And John F. Kennedy's way of being at the podium created a country behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, take that down to a smaller scale, which I live every day and you do and your listeners. I wake up in the morning and I feel stuck in my business, or I have challenges and I can't figure out, I'm looking for how. How do I get more from my employees? How do I grow? How? And I have nothing against the how questions, although I'm more interested in the being questions. Like, who am I being that's created it the way it is? Now, you talk about the intimacy of a relationship with a coaching client. Getting someone to self-inquire and look at themselves at that level, Chris, takes work, because most of us don't want to do that. Like, you know, when I talk about being awake, And the vast majority of us on this planet are asleep. And we kind of want to stay asleep. I hate to use examples like this. It's very Hollywood and cliche-ish, but like The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, it's easier to stay asleep. And my experience of human beings, myself included, is once you wake up to what's possible, you never want to go back to sleep again. It's extraordinary. It's like the smoker who stops smoking and they taste food for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, man, I never tasted that before. My taste buds come back alive. To me, it's the same thing. I can love more intensely. I can give more intensely. I can more consistently not judge. You know, it's like I can grant other people the space to hold their own truth. I don't have to accept it as mine, but I can grant them the space. It's like the example I gave before, showing up to an employee who's maybe not a great worker. What if I gave that employee the experience of me wanting to understand what it's like for them to work for me? And I create it in my way of being such that they actually share it by the questions I ask and by who I'm being. And no matter what they say, they don't feel judged. Can you imagine? You know what comes of that? Workability in a relationship gets upgraded in the most beautiful ways. And by the way, sometimes what workability can look like is separation. I'm really clear. I've had clients who have, in a very powerful way, have let people go. But the person who was let go experienced it like it works for them. Yeah, that's a creation. And again, if I'm in my thoughts about, oh, they're this, they're that, I leave no space to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
So if the people listening, if there's one thing only they wanted to take away, it's that distinction of being and knowing. Know all you want, no more. I encourage you to have knowledge, be a master at your craft, put processes and systems in place, and I'll make you a promise. You're awake to who you're being and you're intentional about who you're being, and you'll create access to possibilities in the knowing that for that moment weren't even on your radar.
So do you have a story you can share of maybe a client or someone you've worked with who's gone from not fully being to waking up to that being part of themselves and the difference that made?
Well, why don't I use me?
Sure.
Yeah, I could use clients, but it doesn't occur to me as useful, and I'd have to be real careful what I share. I won't violate them. You know, think about the story I shared about that day in October 2014 when I met my first coach. I really thought I knew who I was. Like, you know, the cement was setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a successful career flying airplanes, successful career in the business sector, beautiful wife, two beautiful young blonde-haired, blue-eyed boys. They got that from her, not me. They're dark-haired now, but still blue eyes. I was really sure I had it figured out. I didn't question me. I questioned others. I was, you know, likely if I look back on it, I was judgmental. And if I was able to drag my wife on this call with us right now and have her speak into her experience of me, you know, what she would tell you, Chris, because she said this before, I have an agreement with her to be able to share this aspect of it. Our marriage was fine. It was fine. And not long after I started to work with my first coach, or actually right before, it was a big investment. It was an investment that I couldn't explain to my wife, because again, I didn't have the language I have now about this work. And quite honestly, because I said it's ontological way of being, the moment I put language to what I do, it diminishes it. I don't know how else to say it. Someone says, what do? My answer is usually, come sit with me for an hour and you'll see what I do. So my wife was not very happy with me for making that decision. And I made it without her. because that's who I was back then. I knew what I needed, knew what I wanted. Well, she was not very happy with me. And not long after, this is just one aspect to respond to your question, while she's being angry with me, and she's still not sure what I just got myself into and where this money is going down the drain, we're out to dinner one night, and she looks at me and says, I don't know what's going on between you and your coach, but I am falling in love with you all over again. That was a surprise. Yeah. And what the language that she didn't put to it, but I know where it comes from now, is I was shifting who I was being. Now, if I was asleep, here's what I would tell you. Oh, my wife changed. Yeah, she changed. She got more agreeable. She did this. And by the way, she might have changed because who you're being has an impact outside of you. People will change as a result of who you're being.
Absolutely.
Really, the work, the magic happens when I can go inside and change me. So I did that. And what she would say now is, yeah, back then, yeah, Jamie was like most people, judgy. And, you know, I led people in that consulting practice I was in. You know, and by the way, I grant myself, like, grace. I was doing the best I can with what I knew at the time. Like, I'm not judging myself back then. It's not useful. Judging yourself now is not useful. Assessing is useful. It comes from a very different place.
Oh.
And so declaring to the world that I was going to be a coach, I was met with some snickering. And these are from people I know. And it's not like they have anything against me, but wait, you're going to go to what, people? Really? And there are some people who would sort of laugh about it. Now, that had an impact on me back then. Remember, I'm just now in the work. And it was so easy to withdraw, to believe the thoughts, well, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not this. And look, fortunately, because I had a coach and I stayed in the work and I was able to transcend those thoughts, and I'm more committed to the outcome of being a coach and showing up effectively and serving others than believing those thoughts. Some of those same people have come to the courses that I told you about before that Entrepreneur holds, which I'd recommend any human being on this planet to join us. And I'd love to say something about it before we're done.
Please. Yeah.
I've had people, this is now an outcome of what we're talking about. I've had people say to me, these are not people I've coached, but people I've had conversations with, you turned my life around. Or I've had more than one person say, you've saved my marriage. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm also not a fitness coach, and I've been with people who've created extraordinary results in their fitness. I'm a leadership coach. And leadership, as I said earlier, leadership creates performance. Lack of leadership creates lack of performance. There's no disconnect between those two things. There's no exceptions. There's no fine print. It is, and I don't like to say anything that's an absolute, but I stand on that like it's accurate. In any domain of your life, it's all leadership. And it starts with self-leadership. And it doesn't have to be a formal role. When I speak to groups, I'll have the CEO in the room, and let's say the newest intern. I'm speaking to both of them.
Right.
Yeah, leadership is about creating a future that would not have been created. Yeah. That's what leadership really is. And it has nothing to do with your job title. Zero. I've seen someone without a title show up into a situation and lead by who they're being. Now, what gets in the way of that? Oh, I shouldn't say anything. I'm just a new guy here. Man, I wish I had a dollar for every time someone told me that. I wanted to say something, but I didn't. Why not? And then they'll speak into what got in the way, that gap. Now, what they put in the gap, Chris, is, well, I don't have the right job title, something outside of them. And what we're really clear about, I'm clear about, is, no, that's not it. That's nothing to do with that. What if you stepped into it? Yeah. So I hold myself out as my favorite example to answer your question, because who I created myself as today, one, has the most profound impact on me and the living of my everyday life. As a husband, as a father, my health, my friendships, my relationship with my brother, And as importantly, my relationship with my clients.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's deep. And I share your reverence for the role of the coach. It's so high impact. And that, I mean, just think of it in the marketing context. What I experienced was that when the leadership of an organization outsources their marketing, hires an agency, they see it as down the hierarchy. Your job is to go get us leads. They don't engage. But the coaching relationship is where you can actually impact the mental models of the leadership, which are typically the bottleneck to achieving the results and what they do, especially in today's age. I'm speaking to the listeners since this is about strategic thought leadership. And the words of Carl Feldman, who's on a podcast last year, wrote a book called The Visible Expert Revolution. Because the internet's made it so people want relationships with the leaders who are leading thinking in the industry field or profession to learn directly from them where things are going. And leadership is a meta skill. It's like a skill of all skills that, like I said, designs new futures for all of us. And I challenge the listener, what new future are you designing for yourself? And the systems that you're a part of, you spoke about the impact that we have on systems by how we show up. Well, if we're connected in any kind of system, we're a component of that system. If we change a system, we'll change. And the most systems theory says the most influential part of any system is the most flexible. And these things you bring up about shedding these layers of conditioning so we become more flexible in our behavior and able to bring these things about is profound. And I love what you do and where you're coming from. I think it's very, very powerful. I usually wind these interviews up with two things. One is, and we already spoke about this some, so just be a quick summary. What are the three things that you would recommend the listener do to further themselves in showing up, being leader, the things that you coach in, that they can take action on right away? That's the first question. And the second is, someone's listening to this and they want to reach out to you and thinking you could help them or their organization. How would they contact you? And you also mentioned some other resources you'd like to point them to as well.
Yeah. So the three things, let me think. The first is repeating something I said before, which is be awake to the distinction of being and knowing. There's 40,000 plus books on leadership on Amazon, I think. Read the books, but we collect them like squirrels. Be awake to who you're being. You know, someone I know uses an analogy for that, Chris. It's like being a farmer. If you plant cherry pits, you won't grow cotton. You grow cherry trees. If you plant doubt, what do you grow? Doubt.
Doubt trees.
If you plant love, you grow love. If you plant impact, you grow impact. Yeah, just see that for what it is and just notice who you're being without judgment. You know, if I tell myself, I'll give an example of it. If I tell myself, look, in the domain of my marriage, I'm committed to my spouse feeling loved. And that's part of, I have clarity around what I'm committed to in each domain of my life. That structure works for me. And I'm with my wife and she's frustrated with me. Now, if I'm asleep, I'll be like, oh, what's wrong with her? What's her problem? Or what, you know, oh, when I walk out of the room, what if, wait a minute, who am I being that has her that way? I can judge her. I don't want to. It's inconsistent, whatever's going on, with what I just declared I'm committed to, which is her being loved. That thought alone or that thinking I just described, Chris, can change things profoundly. Could have me maybe say, well, look, babe, I'm sorry. What is it that I said that made you upset? Or hey, do you not want to talk right now? Like, I could show up so differently. Now, those thoughts, the ones that have me want to just clap back at her or walk out of the room, they'll be there. They'll be strong. Like, they never go away. I promise. If anyone's taking from this that, oh, those not useful thoughts will vanish? Never. If they vanish, it means you've taken your last breath. Sorry. Your brain wants you to survive. It survives by protecting you. How does it protect you? Blames everything else. Brings you to the status quo. So that's the first thing I would say is be awake to that distinction of being and knowing. Keep knowing, but being and being present to your being and being intentional, being consistent with who you're being, with who you say you want to be, will avail you of systems and processes and answers that you never dreamed of, ever. It's beautiful. It's what has some of my clients in some of the most high stakes businesses right now be able to navigate the pressures of the outside world, just from who they're being. And I see what it does, the impact of the people who follow them. It's beautiful. Second thing that I would offer is this thing about truth. I use the example of the employee who's not as working as hard. If we can see that what we hold is true, it's true for us. It's not the truth. It's our truth that can have me show up, like the example of my wife I just used about if she got upset with me. Like my truth would be she's overreacting. Let's say that. If I hold it like it's the truth, I have no place to go. Mm-hmm. What do I do with that? It's like I'm coming from a place of being that, look, she's overreacting. What if I look to discover what's going on where she is? I don't have to abandon she's overreacting. I can hold on to that. What if I create the space to hear, to ask her questions that can have her feel heard, the greatest gift we can give another human being, in my opinion, and I can discover her truth, and I still don't have to take it on as mine, but man, what that would do to elevate the relationship, to improve workability in it, by just giving them access to me listening to them. In any domain of your life, I promise your listeners do that, and it's hard because you want to share your truth. My truth is the truth. We haven't questioned that. And I'm asking you, I'm challenging who's listening. Hold your truth. You don't have to give it up. I promise. It's yours to keep. Have it forever. Grant someone the space to have theirs as well. Man, Chris, that can have, think about some of the most contentious debates on the planet right now. Abortion, Democrat versus Republican. Gaza, you name it. I don't care what is racial issues. I can sit and have a conversation with anyone on the planet about any of those topics without any angst or worry because I know that my truth is just my truth. And sometimes my truth changes because I'm open to theirs.
Right.
That's the second thing. The third thing I'd encourage this of anyone, come to our course. Like, come. That sounds like a little bit of a unabashed promotion. But you know, I was telling you this before we started recording. We've created access to our work in a 3-day leadership course. We do twice a year, and there are people who come back multiple times. There are people who create relationships with other attendees. It is a 3-day deep dive, intense immersion in the work that we do with our clients. And it's just, it's beautiful. It fills me so much every time those 3 days are over. I would encourage anyone to attend if they can create the space to do it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And how would somebody find you online?
There's several ways. Well, you can find me through my website, jamiedamsker.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. In fact, I post quite a bit. I'll have a thought. I'll shape into something that occurs to me as can be useful in serving those who read it. And I'll just post it on LinkedIn. And then I'll probably also put it on Instagram and Facebook as well. But mostly, if you want to learn about my dogs, who you couldn't really tell I have children by my social media posts, but my wife and I do. If you want to learn about my dogs, go to Facebook. If you want to really dance with me around this work, take on what I put on LinkedIn and reach out to me. And you, people can reach out to me by email too. It's jamie@jamiedamsker.com. So I make it really simple. And my contact info is probably on all those social media profiles as well.
Fantastic. This has been a great pleasure, Jamie. This has gone very deep, very profound, and I hope this is empowering to the listener.
I do too, Chris. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time and the space.
My pleasure.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant, and this has been episode 77, Intentional Leadership with Jamie Damsker, where we discussed topics like going from aviation to leadership in Jamie's coaching evolution, the depths of coaching, transformative relationships, changing thoughts, in changing worlds, Jamie's approach to self-discovery, and the intersection of thought and success. So if you're listening on an app, make sure you go to the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It is linked to in the episode description, where I will have links to various resources of Jamie's, his LinkedIn page, his website, and also OntoCore, corporate leadership coaching, where you can learn more about the coaching program, the 3-day program in September of this year in California. So this is Chris McNeil with Thought Leadership Studio. I appreciate you. Make sure you subscribe if you have not subscribed so far. Make sure you leave a review if you have not. These things help impact and reach more people with the message. And also on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, if you have not already, make sure you download The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership. It's a free guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership. Thanks again for listening. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.